Hello and welcome to episode 18 of the Match of the Week podcast here on the Place to Be Nation podcast network. I'm Tim, and I am joined, as always, by Tanner. Tanner, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing quite well today. Just, again, we were talking shop about some business calculus. We're thinking about pivoting the whole podcast to be just about business calculus.
Man, I tell you, I think there is a group of people out there who would enjoy us talking about business calculus instead of professional wrestling.
Probably.
I feel there's a good chunk.
Yeah, I would say four or maybe even five.
At least. Wow. So I think it's funny that we talked about how, like, the last 2 weeks of shows were kind of squash matches, and we might, like, move on to something else. Yeah, we're going to keep the squash theme going here, and we're going to talk about from SummerSlam 2014, the main event of that show. Of course, we're talking about for the then WWE World Heavyweight Championship with two belts, not one belt, yeah, but with two belts. This would be the champion John Cena defending against Brock Lesnar. So this was a highly anticipated match for many reasons, most notably the fact that Lesnar at his last major pay-per-view was WrestleMania, and he stop the streak of the Undertaker.
Yeah.
In controversial fashion, like, the stories coming out of that match were that McMahon literally made up his mind almost right before the match that Lesnar was going over. And so with that in mind, it was kind of assumed that Lesnar would beat Cena to kind of even them up from the time that Cena beat Lesnar at Extreme Rules. But boy, this wasn't even by the end of this match.
Oh, no.
This was perhaps the gutsiest single booking decision that a major company has made that I can ever recall. Like, this is insane to think that you do this for the main event of your show.
Yeah.
Against somebody who has literally carried the company for a decade coming into it. And with a few years of retrospect now, it really is even more striking.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's crazy too, because I remember at the time, a lot of the buzz for this match was coming from, because I think a lot of people, especially in our circle, hold the Extreme Rules 2012 match very, very highly, like match of the decade level.
Yeah.
And it was between that and the fact that Cena and Lesnar was really never the plan. Like, it was supposed to be Daniel Bryan that was world champion at that point. It was supposed to be, you know, Daniel Bryan versus Brock Lesnar, which, again, would have been cool in its own right. But then we get John Cena, who, you know, the whole prior 10 years prior to this match taking place has the whole stigma around him of, oh, lol, Cena wins, you know, LOL, Cena can't lose, blah, 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 blah. And then, like, just this happens. And, like, this is like, pre-Suplex City Brock Lesnar, which is weird to think about, because the Suplex City didn't even come until WrestleMania 31. And then, but this match kind of is the precursor to that, in the sense of, he just throws Cena around like a sack of potatoes for, like, 15 minutes.
Yeah, the Bryan part is interesting, because, of course, WrestleMania 30, he won the World Heavyweight title, and then, of course, got hurt and had to relinquish it. And that, to be perfectly honest, kind of threw the entire summer awry. Like, there were plans for a lot of different things we talked about. Like, eventually the Bryan-Brock match was teased. But never came to be, and probably will never come to be the way that things are going right now. Yeah. But now that you kind of look at the setting for that match, it was kind of one of those things that WWE does well, is they can really take something that wasn't supposed to happen, kind of like an accidental situation, and they make the most out of it. And sometimes it's for the betterment.
Kind of like Survivor Series last year.
Yeah. You know, and now you look at this match and the way it was booked, and I always try and think about, like, what is the most believable scenario coming into a match.
Yeah.
And this match, this was not a single person believing this. Like, there was no person alive that would have said, Brock is going to beat Cena for 15 minutes, and Cena's going to get a minute, maybe a minute worth of actual offense in, and that's it. And it's and that's the match. Lesnar's just going to absolutely just destroy him. No, that's I just can't. I don't think I can underscore how unfathomable that was.
Especially
I really
like 2014
can't.
Cena. Like, this is before he had taken the like Cena's still full time in 2014. This is before he takes the back seat. Before he takes, you know, this and that. Like, this is Cena like at the peak. Like right before he starts, you know, starts doing some more movies, you know, he has an injury and before his US title reign, like this is still like prime time Cena. And then this match happens. And it's what's really weird. This is also before the F5 got super protected again, outside of WrestleMania matches. And Cena eats how many, two, three, four F5s, a lot of F5s.
He eats two. So
because it was three for Taker. Yeah, you're right.
Right. So the big thing, of course, was how this match started. And it was that basically it was kind of like a ground and pound thing. And then all of a sudden, Lesnar is able to gain control. And he tries to put Cena away early with an F5, 30 seconds in. And from there, Lesnar's just like, okay, now I get to play with my food, essentially.
Yeah.
And just starts suplexing the shit out of him.
I mean, it's not even like wrestling suplex. It's like legit, like Lesnar's just tossing Cena on his, you know, like neck, which he's had, you know, several neck problems, several shoulder problems. And Cena's just like bumping straight up on his neck and shoulders.
Yeah. Also takes some just insane knee shots to the ribs.
Yeah.
Just absolutely insane knee shots to the ribs. And this is what literally happens. And it got to the point where when you had seen Brock matches in the small time since he had been back, they had been kind of shorter matches. They really hadn't had much to them outside of the Taker match and maybe a couple others. But even then, like a Brock showcase match, there really wasn't much to it. And so I think a lot of people expected this to kind of go maybe not as long as the Undertaker match, and it doesn't go as long as the Undertaker match, but I think people thought this would be kind of 8 to 12 minutes. And the way they set this match up, like it's going to be a sprint, right? Yeah. They set it up like, oh, man, there's a sense of urgency here, and they're going to get after it. And Cena, to his credit, the way that this match is laid out, he takes his punishment and then he does whatever he can to figure out whatever small chance he has, and he milks it, and there bursts. Like, if you think about like your normal, you know, matchup, a singles matchup, face gets to shine early, transition to the heel gets to beat him up, maybe a hope spot or two, then the face makes his comeback, and then you go to your finish. This was, it wasn't this turn on its head, but the way this match was structured, it was like you kept waiting for Cena's sustained comeback like he always had, and it never comes.
Yeah. It
like ever.
It's, yeah, because the match, it's set up in a way where there's moments where you're like, okay, Cena's about to, you know, hop back on offense, and, you know, now we're going to get our match. And he just never does. Like, he gets a little bit about, it's like, it's not, it's such a, it comes at such a, it's such a weirdly paced match. Like, Cena's hope spot doesn't come, like, where professional wrestling tells you that hope spots usually go, that is not where Cena's is. Like, it's just, like, randomly thrown in there, and then Brock, you know, goes on for a few more minutes before, you know, obviously beating him. But it's just, it's one of those things I remember watching in real time, like, why is this happening? How is this happening? Because, I mean, I know a lot of people at the time didn't really expect Brock to win because they were like, oh, Brock, you know, Brock's going to get out of there, go back to the UFC because the UFC rumors had started back up. And people were like, there's no way Brock's winning. And then, boom, Brock not only beats John Cena, but literally squashes him. Like, there's no, like, nothing. And it's so weird coming off, you know, he c- coming off, yes, he's coming off of the victory against The Undertaker, but coming off of that is a highly contested contest with CM Punk and taking 2 out of 3 from Triple H, which is like just weird to think about. Like, this is before he even started doing house shows. And it's just like, boom, squashes Cena. Like, he was competitive with Punk, very competitive with Triple H, and then loses to Cena in his first match back. In this match, he's just like, boom, bam, wasted, done. And it's still in my head almost 4 years later as we're approaching this year's SummerSlam. And it's still bizarre to me that this happened. That, like, this just seems like one of those spur of the moment, like, okay, we're doing this. Like, we're making Brock the guy, and we're going to see what happens. I mean, Brock was already kind of the guy, but, like, now Brock is the guy with the titles. And,
right.
Yeah.
And they made mention of that. It was the first time in almost a decade that he had been WWE champion. Of course, he won his first title at SummerSlam 2002 against The Rock. And so SummerSlam for Brock was kind of a big deal. And I feel also in retrospect, so like looking at Brock in 2014, like this has motivated Brock.
Oh,
Brock's
yeah.
in freaking great shape.
Yeah.
Like, one thing you realize is that his cardio here, like, people saying, oh, he's blown up, he's sweating. Like, Brock has always been that guy. He's always been the guy that's just, like, drenched in sweat no matter what he does.
I mean, when you're 290 pounds and doing that much, you know, effort, like, it's kind of hard not to be drenched in sweat.
Right. But, like, his cardio here is just insane.
Yeah.
His explosiveness, all that stuff. And you kind of think of it in retrospect, it's like, this was kind of the... This was probably the, I don't know if it's the best he looked after, like, he came back and had the incredible match with Cena at Extreme Rules, and people were like, yeah, Brock looks like, you know, like he never left. But this was kind of a situation where you're like, okay, yeah, you're going to strap Brock, and now you get to see what happens going forward. And I feel that now, especially, you just kind of sit back and think, it's like, you know, 4 years go by, Brock's 40 now. And it's, you kind of think, it's like, should there be that much of a difference between Brock now and Brock then? And there is, like, there's a huge difference.
Yeah. Giant difference.
It's sad, to be perfectly honest with you. But you're also, you know, a guy that is very smart, politically savvy to the point where he's, to say some certain people who probably are listening to this podcast will say he's built McMahon out of a lot of money. But then in the same vein, McMahon has pushed him like he is the guy.
Yeah.
But there's a couple things that, especially in retrospect, look very weird. And I know we're talking about the SummerSlam match, but one of the reasons why Brock was put over this strongly was so that when WrestleMania 31 came around, Roman Reigns taking him down was a big deal.
Yeah.
That was the onus here. And so Brock, when he made his title defenses, he had the rematch with Cena, which I think some people think might even be better than this match.
Yeah, a lot that of people sleep on that Night of Champions match.
Yeah. No, that match was terrific. A lot of people thought it was kind of finisher spamming in a way, but the way that was laid out, I thought it was about as good as it got.
Yeah.
He had the insane Royal Rumble 3-way match with him and Cena and Rollins, which was bonkers.
Yeah.
And that was Brock getting his quote unquote mid match rest, but he looked like a monster when he was in there.
Everybody was on fire in that match. That was a great performance by all three guys.
Right. But the idea here was by Brock doing this to Cena, you're setting it up for the Golden Boy getting his shot the next WrestleMania.
Yep.
And now, especially, man, with more years of hindsight, and this year it looks like, unless they throw Bob in there, Brock versus Reigns once again.
Yeah.
It is absolutely comical that Roman Reigns did not go over clean as a sheet at WrestleMania 31.
That also comical that he didn't go over clean as a sheet at WrestleMania 34.
Yeah. So yeah,
it's
Greatest Royal Rumble. Yeah.
Brock has to have some sort of like magic voodoo powers or something, like straight up, just because like it's so weird because like, yes, he was a once in a generation athlete, and it's absolutely bonkers that professional wrestling was lucky enough to have him. But at the same time, the dude makes, I mean, he makes insane money, like per appearance, not even per match, just like straight up per appearance. He's making more money than
right.
most of us will ever pull down in our lives. And he's not a draw, really. I mean, like there's like the house shows that he's on get no noticeable bump. Pay-per-view buy rates have been useless since he's been back because it's all about the network now. So it's one of those things where I don't get me wrong. You know, Brock Lesnar, I think he's a great I think he was a great professional wrestler and still has great performances. Like the Styles match last year, I think was really, really good. I think the Fatal 4-Way match from SummerSlam last year was really, really good. But it's just one of those things where like, I just have no interest in seeing him anymore. And I feel like even with like common fans, I know that seems to be the gist. They're just like, man, when are they going to take the title off of Brock? Which is such a weird thing, but like when, and then like, I know like the part-timer thing is like a big, like, oh, blah, blah, who cares? But like the dude's just never around. Like, it seems weird to me that you have this guy be your main champion, breaks, you know, the record that you have went on, you know, you went on and on about for years at one point, just breaks it nonchalantly, not even on Raw, doesn't defend it, whatever. And he hasn't been around since April and won't be around till what, the last day of July, you know, the first Monday of August. It's just one of those things where it's like, is it really worth it? Like, I don't know. It's weird. I'm going on a rant now, but it's just one of those weird things that I've never really been able to wrap my head around.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, this is, I'm really happy that we decided on this match because retrospect to this match, like looking back on it, the match itself, I think is very good. It's very unique. You know, even in the idea of squash matches that we've talked about, it's setting the stakes. This is one of the more unique situations in the history of pro wrestling.
Yeah.
But what this was supposed to be the basis for, man, it really did not become what it should have been. And this, like I said, a lot of it has to do with the way that Brock kind of politicked how this was going to go, because him and Roman did have that great match. Mm-hmm. He kind of take, you know, I will say this. He definitely, I think, took liberties with Roman, you know, busting him open hard way, that clothesline spot on the apron at WrestleMania 31, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But Brock, and you have to give him credit, even though I don't like the fact that it happened, he used what happened with Taker and used this match to basically set himself up for the way he was used from then until now. He hasn't taken a direct pinfall unless it's been Goldberg. When he's been in multi-man matches, of course, WrestleMania 31, you had the Seth cash-in. Brock doesn't eat the pin. It's if you think about the way he's been protected, like, it doesn't turn out to be something that's beneficial to the company writ large.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the issue here with this match, is that when you think about what this was supposed to set up, regardless of what happened with Roman Reigns at the Royal Rumble 2015, Roman versus Brock should have been the time for Roman, and it didn't. And especially looking at this match, that becomes the big issue here, is that this really should have been, because then we wouldn't have had the issues we've been having with Roman Reigns for the last 3 years. And it's going to get worse, because I'm telling you this right now, for SummerSlam coming up, the fact that Ronda Rousey is facing Alexa Bliss is no coincidence. They are putting Brock and Roman on the same show. They're probably going to main event Rhonda and Alexa so that they give the fans something good to go home with. And that's what's kind of sad for me, is that if they really finally pull the trigger on Roman, it's going to be way too late.
It's one of those things where even if the Roman thing doesn't work out, they would have had plenty of time to correct course at this point.
Right.
And now you've set yourself back 3.5 years because you've talked yourself into thinking that this 40-year-old guy is somehow making business boom. Which, I mean, right, to their credit, you know, just signed multiple billion-dollar television deals. Their stock is higher than it's ever been in the history of ever. I don't think any of that has to do with Brock Lesnar, and I think people that think it has to do with Brock Lesnar are, you know, out of their mind. But, you know, it something's working. So I guess, you know, behind the scenes, it's one of those things like, well, you know what, we can afford to do this. But it just seems weird to me, like, if your main goal is to bring in new viewers, which is every television program's goal, why you wouldn't want your centerpiece to be there at least, you know, twice a month. If not weekly, like your world champ, the whole thing that professional wrestling is built on is champions. And right now, I mean, your main champion on Raw is Dolph Ziggler. Like, that's really a thing happening in 2018. Like, talk about things happening way too late, making Dolph Ziggler a guy, you know, 5 years after the fact is mind-boggling.
So I want to go back to the match itself because there are some similarities between this match and the Hashimoto Tanaka match we talked about last time, in the sense that when Cena does get his kind of hope spots here, they really don't end up mattering at all.
No.
And I think it's incredible that, like, that's how it's designed, right? So Cena, his first comeback where he's bouncing off the ropes and trying to lariat Lesnar down, can't do it. Suplex, you know, a few suplexes later, back to square one. Cena catches him with a surprise AA. Two count that's close, and then he goes back to the corner, and then Lesnar does the zombie sit up to mess with the Undertaker.
Yeah.
Then Lesnar is just up bouncing around. Cena, because he's Cena, goes after him, but Lesnar just continues to throw him around, asks Charles Robinson to check on him, saying he's out, check on him. That leads to the STF hope spot. But just like that sleeper spot from the Tanaka Hashimoto match, like, Lesnar isn't really fazed. He gets up out of it, F5, boom, new champion.
Yeah.
And, like, I think about that from a structure standpoint. Like, I understand it from a Tanaka Hashimoto, right? Mm-hmm. It's Tanaka, who is still trying to find his way against one of the legends of Japanese wrestling. But that's Brock Lesnar essentially no-selling the finishing hold for John Cena.
Yeah.
And they're pinning him 10 seconds later.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Doing that for, you know, any notable wrestler is like, ugh, that's fishy. I mean, like, that's your top guy. Like, John Cena has been your top guy since, I mean, at the latest, what, 2006, 2005? But, I mean, you make the argument for a decade at that point.
Right.
How, like, I don't know. It's got to be something. I don't know. Vince McMahon got, or Brock Lesnar got to have some dirt on the McMahons or something, because holy shit, right, did they just cater to him at everything. It's wild. And I don't mean for this to sound like a ragging on Brock Lesnar, but it's just, I mean, it really is wild how, like, you have currently the WWE has the greatest roster ever assembled in wrestling history. And it will only continue to be that. And your main champion is a guy that shows up once a quarter and is in his 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and don't get me wrong, I love, you know, old guy wrestlers as much as anybody. You know, Negrokos is still one of the greatest of all time and still one of the greatest this year. But it just seems absurd.
Yeah. So I'm also, one thing to keep in mind here is that your guy in John Cena, who has basically given everything he can to that company, and him agreeing to do that.
Oh yeah.
Right. Right. If anybody could tell Vince, you know, let's do something else, it's John Cena. But they talk about it. The long road, like we talked about, it's like Cena's like, okay, hey, if you think this is what's going to be the best thing to help get, if he'd been told, you know, Roman's the guy, then why not, right?
Yeah.
But, and I he'll never talk about it, but you kind of wonder now in retrospect what John thinks about this match.
Yeah, especially considering just with everything that happened after it and none of it panning out the way it should have. Like, you,
yeah,
you, and I get that, you know, they kind of had a not half-ass, but really like scramble and put together everything really quickly. Like, John, you know, gets another title reign, because Daniel Bryan has to vacate, gets injured, and like, so he gets like a couple of week title reign, maybe a month or two, and then just jobs out to Brock Lesnar for some, okay, like. Like, John Cena's always been about business. I mean, he says this in every interview he ever does. Like, he pretty much worships the ground that Vince McMahon walks on. So he does whatever he said. Because, I mean, granted, gave him his, you know, fortune, his fame, whatever. Couldn't do anything without WWE. I get that. But at the same time, it's just like, wow. Like, I couldn't fathom, like, being like, you know what? That seems like a good move. It's, I mean, it's, yeah. Again, you know, hindsight, 2020. But... wow, it just such a and don't get me wrong, I love the match. I think it's probably the greatest squash match WWE has ever put on by a large margin. And I do think this is before Brock realized that he could be very lazy and make a lot of money, because I think he puts in a lot of effort in this match. But it's such a weird decision. Still 4 years later, such a weird decision.
Yeah. And who knows, maybe it's Brock and Roman again in a few weeks, and for some reason they decide to, and Brock goes over. And to be perfectly honest with you, I would not be surprised.
It wouldn't surprise me. Like, at this point, like, right. After Brock goes over Roman at 34, Brock goes over Roman in Saudi Arabia, like, why not? Let's just go for the three-peat this year. Let Brock go over Roman, and where are they doing SummerSlam this year? Barclays. Let me go over Brooklyn. Barclays. Why not?
That's the other thing. So that crowd, you thought the crowd at WrestleMania 34 is bad? Like, that's a Brooklyn crowd.
Oh, yeah.
All right? That crowd is going to shit all over
that. Yeah, they don't care who you are. They'll just shit on you regardless.
Yeah. Right. But like I said, it's like, do not be surprised that come SummerSlam in 2018 that Brock and Roman are not the main event.
What?
That the main event will be Ronda and Alexa.
Oh, man, I hope they open the show, Lesnar and Roman.
Oh!
They would never
do that. That would be amazing.
They would never do that, but God, how good would it be?
Oh, God. Brock goes, like, and like Roman goes over with two spears in 90 seconds or something like that.
That'd be really good. You know what? I'm convinced that's what they should do.
Yep. You know what? You've talked me into it.
Fuck it. We've put it on the pre-show. For no reason.
Make sure Andy Almas gets on the main show, but make sure Brock and Roman are on the pre-show.
Yeah, give me my Sin Cara Almas shoot fight, semi-maining SummerSlam, and put Lesnar and Roman on the pre-show. It works out for everybody.
Yeah, at least I think so. I think it works out for everybody. So there you go. So we've gone from kind of the sadness of the outcome of that match to give us Sin Cara and Andy Almas above Brock and Roman, you cowards.
Yes.
That's where we are with this. So, oh man, well, good stuff. I'm glad we talked about this match. We continue our streak of squash matches. We're 3-for-3. And now we will move on probably to a non-squash match next week. Next match will be a non-squash. It'll be a fun one nonetheless. So, Tanner, where can people find you on the interwebs?
You can follow. I have another podcast I do called the All You Can Hear Podcast. You can follow us over at AYCH Podcast and find us on all your podcasting services and all that good stuff. And you can follow my personal Twitter at Tanner1495.
I am on the Twitter as well at Mr. Tim Livingston, and you can also follow at PPW Petaluma. We had our most recent show at the end of beginning of June, I should say, just go up on YouTube. So check that out, enjoy it, and follow us for the next show coming down the line. So, Tanner, good stuff. We'll do this again next week.
Absolutely, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Me too, man. All right, well, thanks for joining us as always, and we'll see you next week on the Match of the Week podcast.
Ta-ta.